Hello, this is Charles Lincoln. I'm here with Robert Stark and Terry Trussell. We're broadcasting from Clearwater, Florida, and this is about a very interesting situation that arose in Dixie County, Florida. Terry Trussell and I just met today for the very first time, but it turns out we have a great deal in common. We've both been fighting official corruption and the question of immunity of public officials very separately in different parts of the country. But I, of course, was involved in this in Texas for many years, and Terry, it appears, has been doing this in Florida for many years. And we also have in common that we've been attacked by the same left-wing online rags. And that makes it even more interesting to me. Terry, tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into this situation. Let me just give a background. Terry has to be a little bit guarded with everything he'll say tonight because he is currently under indictment for how many counts?
14 third-degree felonies.
14 third-degree felonies, and the judge has said he wants to put you away for how long?
70 years.
Is that all?
Well, based on my current age, I'll be 141 years old when I get out and probably have to be retrained for employment.
You think?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I wonder what kind of zombification programs they have going. Anyhow, let's think about what this all happens. I think it's always very interesting to see what our greatest fans are saying about people who believe in the Constitution. I have in front of me something called the Daily Kos, which has actually written about me in the past and a bunch of other constitutional types. And it starts off, the title is Now for a Little Common Law Grand Jury Schadenfreude. If anyone has been following the antics of the National Liberty Alliance of late, are you a member of this group, of the National Liberty Alliance?
No, I'm not.
What do they have to do with this?
I don't know.
Okay. Are you affiliated with Larry Klayman?
No.
You know Larry Klayman?
I know who he is. Yeah, he did a grand jury in Ocala, Florida, which is not too far from me. But I've never met him. Don't know anything about him.
Mm-hmm. Anyhow, Tell us how you got this amazing indictment.
Well, actually, I haven't been indicted. I was arrested. I wasn't even arrested on a warrant. I was just arrested and taken to jail and required to bail out.
When was this?
This was done September 2nd of last year. And I bailed out within 24 hours, went to a first appearance hearing, and was trying to figure out what happened and what my charges were because there was no information of any kind about why I was charged or what I was actually charged with. And they refused to give me nature and cause of the charges, anything that I might have done to cause myself to be arrested. And that's pretty much where I stayed for a few days. On the second day after I got out of jail, I finally received an affidavit from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement stating that there was probable cause to believe that I might have been thinking about some things and was probably going to do something about fraud or something. It was just a very broad, vague allegations made, all based on what this FDLE officer believed I was thinking.
What's FDLE?
FDLE is Florida Department of Law Enforcement. They're kind of a Gestapo for the governor, and I mean they work pretty. They do whatever he says, and so that's how they work.
So now, were you actually summoned to jury duty?
Yes, I was summoned to jury duty. Didn't know what I was going in for until I got there. I went through all the filtration process and the questions and so forth, and ended up in the jury box as one of the finalists, 21 people on the jury, and I was selected as foreman of the grand jury, and I was told to go home Forget about it. Nothing was going to happen for the next 6 months. It was more of a formality. And unless somebody murdered somebody in the county, we probably wouldn't hear from the state attorney at all. And after being instructed that we were supposed to be doing all of these things in the community and then being told to go home, I thought, well, this is a little curious, and I did some additional research on it. Found out that we were supposed to be watching out for public corruption, communistic organizations. I mean, they've got a whole list of things on the Florida Supreme Court's instructions to the jury, which is quite an interesting document because...
And that's an official state document.
Oh, yeah, that's by the Supreme Court. It tells us what we're supposed to be doing, and that was counter to what the state attorney told us what to do. We weren't given a copy of it. We didn't, you know, that was it. It was just read to us and okay, fine, and then go home.
But when it was read to you, so in that sense it was delivered.
It was delivered by the judge, yeah, by the seating judge. And when I went home, I downloaded a copy of it and read it again, and I said, oh, my God, we're supposed to be doing all of this stuff. And that was orders from the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court. And we took an oath, and we were going to do all this stuff, and then we were told not to do anything, and I thought that was contradictory. So anyhow, a couple of months down the road, I had some people come to me, and they were very much concerned about an issue in the county. And they didn't know at that time that I was on the grand jury. After they told me what it was, I said, would you have a problem if I present this to the statutory grand jury? And they said, no, not at all. We'd love it. Anybody who can do anything about this, because the county's being damaged. There's officials are being bribed. There's corruption here all the way up to the state level, maybe beyond. And I said, well, give me the information, whatever you've got. I'll put it before the grand jury and see if they'll consider it. And that's how it all got started. So they gave me the information. I called the grand jury together. And I thought that the... state attorney was being very cooperative until the day of the session. And when we got into the session, he came in. He wasn't invited in. He's not required to be there if the grand jury doesn't ask for him to be there. And he came in and basically took over the meeting, corrupted it, testified before the grand jury, and just did some really obnoxious and unnecessary things.
When you said he corrupted it, can you explain a little bit of what you mean by that?
Well, I found out after he got there that he had contacted all of the grand jury members and prepared them for the session. And apparently the information that I got later was he told them that I was trying to overthrow the government, that I was a sovereign citizen, which I'm not. I even had to look that up online to find out what it was. And I was a little shocked to see that he said things like that about me. And so, he basically poisoned the grand jury against me. And not only that, but there were documents that these people had prepared for me to give the grand jury supporting their position. And they were supposed to go just to the jury because it was there's a real serious or sensitive security issue for these people. I didn't realize how serious it was until I got pounded like this. And anyhow, he asked me if he could have a copy of the documents. I said, no, this is for the grand jury only. And he got one of the grand jury members after the session was over to come back in, get one of the copies, and bring it back out to him. And, I mean, he was told already he wasn't supposed to have the documents. It didn't mean anything. There was nothing in there that I think he could use against anybody for anything. He was just being nosy and wouldn't take no for an answer. I mean, that's what he did. But, yeah, I'm sorry.
Who is this you're talking about?
This is a guy named Jeff Siegmeister. He's the state attorney for the Third Circuit. And the thing is,
he's a prosecuting attorney.
He's a prosecuting attorney.
He normally handles criminal cases.
Yeah, it's like he's district attorney in some states, state attorney in others. And the thing is, Jeff and I had a good relationship prior to that. I had helped him get elected, voted for him, as a matter of fact. He came to my group, spoke four times, distributed copies of the Constitution, talked to everybody about what a strong constitutionalist he was, and he was going to clean up all the corruption in the district and all this stuff. And we thought, hey, this guy's great. Let's get him on.
You mentioned your group. What is your group?
This was the Tea Party group, Dixie County Tea Party. We had about 20, 30 people came to our meetings on a regular basis. And, you know, we just, all we did was educate each other, or we had speakers come in and educate us on things like the Constitution and some of the issues that the country's facing that are of concern. And, you know, it's just mainly a group of people. Most of us were over 60 years old, so.
How many people in Dixie County?
17,000.
Very small county.
What's
the biggest town?
Cross City is the county seat, and it's the largest town. And there's only about three or four towns in the whole county. It's a great place to live because it's rural and it's very simple and it's great. I mean, it's so comfortable living there. The people are wonderful. My wife and I have been there for 3 years. We're active in the community. We do volunteer work. I was on the sheriff's auxiliary patrol. You know, we direct traffic for funerals and park cars for high school games and that sort of thing. Just a great place to be.
You're not the typical subversive wearing a ski mask or anything.
Yeah, I'm 71 years old. I'm retired, and all I want to do is sit on my little 5-acre farm with my wife and enjoy life and pick up the eggs from the chickens. And you know, our life is very simple.
I'm looking at the list of charges against you right now in the Circuit Court for the Third Judicial Circuit in and for just Dixie County, Florida. And it appears that there are only three different felonies, but multiple counts of all of them. The biggest one is a list of 10 here that says unlawful retaliation against a public officer. 10 counts of that. Can you explain to me what that might be about?
Well, apparently if you have a difference of opinion, first of all, I didn't make up these true bills.
Oh.
That was made up by the grand jury. I mean, all I did was sign it and deliver it as I was instructed to do. None of the other grand jurors are on trial with me. I'm the only one that's being persecuted on this, and I really didn't have anything more to do with it than to sign the documents because they made me just a stand-in temporary foreman.
But you were elected as foreman by the jury. Right?
By the statutory grand jury, I was.
Yes.
This was after the statutory grand jury was corrupted by the state attorney's antics. I took this true bill to another group that had set up a common law grand jury, and that's where I got in trouble. I didn't realize these. I checked the U.S. v. Williams. I checked everything I could to make sure they were legitimate, and the state attorney says they're not, but they have a charter, they got bylaws, they have an organization. I didn't know this wasn't...
What was your purpose? I mean, what were you paying?
The whole purpose. Well, here's the thing. The people of the county gave me an issue. I had taken an oath.
I mean, not the people of the county, but actually the government of the county, right?
No, this was the people of the county came in and said, you know, made me aware of the fact that there was an issue in the county dealing with public corruption.
But you had already been summoned at that point.
I was already seated on the grand jury, the statutory grand jury. And that's when, as I said, the state attorney corrupted that one. So I just took it over to the common law, the jury under common law, and presented it to them. They issued the true bill. I signed it. I took it to the sheriff, and now I'm charged. I've got 14 felony counts. And they're saying that I impersonated a public officer. Well, a grand jury foreman is not a public officer, number one. Number two, I didn't impersonate anybody. That's who I was. And that's where we seem to be running into a rub. That's part of it. They said they were simulating legal process. Well, that grand jury issued a true bill presentment, and a presentment is an informal recommendation of actions to be taken by law enforcement, and I gave it to law enforcement, and they're saying that I hindered public officials and kept them from doing their job. Well, I gave the paper to the sheriff. I didn't give it to anybody. I mean, I didn't hinder anybody from doing their job or intimidate them or anything else. I did what I thought was the right thing. Plus, the one factor that I can't figure out is the Supreme Court of Florida, in their handbook, they state in there that they extend immunity to all members of the grand jury for any official act. Well, I don't know what can be more official than presenting a presentment, which is what I was ordered to do. In every step of this thing, I did exactly what I was authorized to do, what I was ordered to do, and what I took an oath to do. And the prosecutor that now has this case has basically said, well, you did it wrong. And I said, well, how would I know how to do it right? After I had run into the problem with the state attorney corrupting it, I wrote a 7-page report and gave it to the judge that seated us. And I said, Judge, we need to talk. I got a problem with what the state attorney did in our grand jury session. He did things that were totally wrong, violation of the law, violation of the rules and the instructions. And I said, we need to talk about it. And she said, I don't have time for it. And that's where it went. And she took an oath to take care of the grand jury. She was in charge of it. And she turned her back on it and walked away. So I was left out there floundering, trying to figure out how to live up to my oath and deal with a corrupted state attorney and a judge that refused to do her job.
And the really interesting thing about this is now you have this 14-count indictment against you. They've threatened you with 70 years in prison after summoning you to appear on a statutory grand jury, and which elected you foreman. And you're on trial. You have a trial that's scheduled, at least. It might be postponed. We hope it will be. But it's currently scheduled for February 9th in the Circuit Court of Dixie County, Florida. And yet neither the judges of the Third Judicial Circuit nor the prosecutors were actually prosecuting you, right?
Well, no. All of the judges in the Third Circuit, there's 11 of them. And they have all recused themselves. They've refused to stand for this. And what they're saying is that they would have a conflict of interest with since the state attorney of that district or circuit has been charged. That's not even a rational excuse. The real excuse is that their people are so upset about what they're trying to do to me that they are afraid they're going to have to suffer the consequences in the voting booth. So the governor has assigned a judge and a state attorney from the Second Circuit. They're working in tandem as a team to prosecute me. And they don't have to worry about the consequences back in their circuit because nobody's going to know about what they did to me. So the whole thing seems to be not only a conflict of constitutional rights, they violated my civil rights, but it's a violation of the Florida Constitution and the Florida statute. But they brush every bit of that aside and say it doesn't really matter. We're going to get you and forget about all the laws and the rules and procedures and everything else. So that's what they've done basically, is gone after me. Now, I tried to find an attorney. I couldn't find a single attorney that would touch me for less than $100,000. Look, I'm retired. My wife and I live on our Social Security.
What do you used to do? Tell us a little bit about your background.
I was a commercial artist, graphic designer. I spent some time as a bail bondsman. I've done whatever I needed to do to make a living and support my wife and my daughter. And my wife was a teacher for 43 years. And that's it. We live a simple life. We don't smoke, we don't drink, we don't party, we don't do anything. We work and we stay at home, and that's it. And we thought we were living a good life and trying to do the best we could for our community until we ran into this public corruption. And when we tried to stand up and say something about it, we're being crushed. And the law community, you would think an attorney, some attorney somewhere would say, hey, I'll help you out, but I can't get an attorney to talk to me. I have tried to get guidance wherever I could, and apparently, according to stuff I'm reading, I'm getting a lot of criticism from the legal community because I don't have a lawyer, but if their prices are so high I can't afford it, that's that kind of puts me in that position. And if whatever I can do to try to defend myself, if I get the wrong advice, I don't know what to do. You know, I feel like I'm being victimized by the legal profession or the bar association or whatever it is, because they've made themselves unavailable to people like me. And so they're saying everything I do is sovereign citizen. My God, it's like, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't.
I'm just curious. So the daily cost in here says that you were associated with a group called Operation American Spring.
Yeah, I was. I went to Washington, D.C. with Colonel Riley. And there was a failed attempt at trying to get people to rally and make it known to our government that we were not happy with some of the things that they're doing. In fact, probably a lot of the things that they're doing. But it was just another group that tried to protest, and it didn't go anywhere. I made a lot of friends, met great people, spent time with my congressman up there, who was very sympathetic.
Who's your congressman?
That's Ted Yoho, and he's fighting every chance he gets, but Ted told me, and I really have a tremendous amount of respect for Ted. I fought to get him elected, and I enjoy speaking with him every chance we get. And Ted told me, he said, look, Terry, he said, I came to Washington, D.C. I said, give me a bulldozer, and I'll clean this place out. He said, they handed me a teaspoon. He said, this is a bigger, dirtier job than I ever thought it would be, and he said, I can't do it from here. He said, you're going to have to go back to your county. Do what you can to clean your county up. If people will clean their counties up, they can clean up their states. If we can get the states cleaned up, we can do something about Washington, D.C. And that's, I took it to heart. And I said, when this corruption showed up, I thought, well, here's this little state attorney down here playing God, and somebody needs to put their foot down. And apparently you're not allowed to stand up to political corruption, especially in Florida.
Does Congressman Yoho know about your press?
Yeah, he does. We talked on the phone about it a couple of times, and he's very much aware. He's reached out, but it's very limited. The corruption in the state of Florida is so pervasive. It runs deep and wide. Well, going back to Congressman Yoho, like I said, we had the conversation. I'm doing what he asked me to do. I'm trying to clean up my county. But I'll tell you, they're doing everything they can to crush me and my wife. And, I mean, I've got nothing to fight these people with. They've got every resource in the state to go after us. And I don't stand a chance. I can't find an attorney that will help me. And I have tried. I've reached out to them, and I've done everything I can. The judge told me he's going to give me limited rights to defend myself in court. I don't even know how to deal with something like that. I'm a Vietnam veteran. I spent a year in Vietnam. I was not a combat. I know it's been reported I was a combat veteran. I didn't get involved in any combat. I was a support troop.
What years were you in?
I was there in 68, 69. I got there right after Tet and just before Hamburger Hill. And I was up in the I Corps area up in Da Nang. I was with a PSYOP unit. We printed up the leaflets and the flyers and stuff that were dropped on the enemy, and that was my job, and that's what I did. I did that for a year and came home, got out. It was the middle of all of the war protests that were going on. It was not a pleasant experience. You think you're going to serve your country, and, you know, people insult you, denigrate you, and attack you when you come home. It was not a fun time to be there. I'm not complaining. I'm just so glad that the people that are being forced to serve us now at least are treated with a little more respect when they come home. And I do everything I can to let them know how much I appreciate their efforts, although I feel they might be misplaced. I think they should be here fighting for what we need. But that's my opinion. And apparently nobody cares about my opinions.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you have been something of an activist. Is that fair to say?
Listen, I go to the meetings. I take the classes. I've been to constitutional classes. I've been to everything that I could think of that will help build my understanding of how this country should be operated in order to to have any level of success, and I see nothing but the country going the opposite direction. And it's disturbing. I don't know how much I can do. I can't, I don't intend to go out and start throwing bombs or loading a weapon or anything else. I think there's got to be a peaceful way to solve this problem. And if the corruption is that deep, and apparently it might be, it's just a matter of time anyhow. So I don't know. It's hard to be optimistic under these circumstances.
I'm curious, the information against you appears to say that one of the things you did was you had a true bill of presentment for the arrest of certain people regarding the school system, the Dixie County School Board.
Yeah, that was based on Common Core, and the people that brought me the case, they had done some research into it. And what had happened was the state of Florida came to Dixie County and they said, look, we're going to give you $1 million to implement Common Core. And they hand them a contract that the county, the school board director is supposed to, superintendent, whatever, is supposed to sign. And in that contract, he's got to come up with an additional $5 million to implement the program. So the state is coming in saying, you have to do this, giving him a mandate, and then he's got to find another $5 million somewhere in the county, which means the people of the county
In a county of 17,000,
you're talking about poverty. This county is poor. And so what's going to happen is, okay, fine. He's got to sign it because he's mandated to do it. The state gives him this $1 million. And then he's got to turn around and come to the people and say, okay, your property values are going up. So, this is insidious, what's being done with this Common Core program. I wasn't that much aware of it until I started seeing what these people were bringing me. And my God, they're destroying us with it. So I said, all right, fine, let's let the jury decide. The jury decided. They wrote up the true bill, and now they want to put me in prison for 70 years for signing the bill and handing it to the sheriff.
Wow, that is pretty amazing. And am I looking at the bill of information that you're basically being indicted for?
No, this was a bill of information that was put in by the grand jury. I'll show you the one that's the actual true bills that were put out by the grand jury were written by the grand jury themselves. They put it together.
Well, this one is signed by you, this bill of information, right?
That's the complaint about Seedmeister that was put into the clerk of court.
Okay, and it appears it was received.
Yeah.
Received by Dana B. Johnson.
Yeah, she was the...
This is
the true bill here.
Is this what they're calling retaliation?
No. That and this. And this is the main one here that they're talking about being retaliation. And these were presentments. Presentments, by the way, and we were ordered on the grand jury, we were ordered to do presentments by the instructions, statutes and by the Supreme Court's handbook. So that's what our job was to do, is produce these presentments. A presentment is an informal recommendation. It carries no weight of law. And how this could have been considered something that was harassment, I have no clue.
You didn't try to arrest anyone, right?
No, we wouldn't arrest.
You didn't order the sheriff to go out and arrest anyone.
Well, we had what was done, and I didn't do it, but the grand jury did. They said that the sheriff should arrest somebody within his jurisdiction, which meant his legal, his geographical
authority,
his whatever was his authority and his consideration, his determination. I mean, all it's doing is saying these people, in our view, have committed a crime. If they said, instead of arrested, said, take them to lunch, I don't know, nobody would have taken that very seriously either. But the thing is interesting in this, nobody did anything with these papers. And yet, this is what they're saying was so horrible and so threatening to the entire state. It has brought the state of Florida to the knees based on what they're trying to do to me for it. So,
but these were filed with the clerk of court.
They were filed with the clerk of court, and we did that just to memorialize them. Now, let me make sure I'm clear on this. This is not as a court document. It was put into the public record.
And clerk of the circuit court, it says filed. And,
yeah, but it's in the court. It's in the public records.
So it's basically like in the real estate record?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is actually not in any court?
No, it's not in any court. It has no weight of law.
So this is like basically a memorandum of fact.
That's correct.
And basically you're being indicted for trying to... You have, or you've been charged.
Yeah, I've been charged. I've never been indicted.
Okay. Well, you've got a criminal charges pending.
Yeah.
Based on expressing your dissatisfaction with the way the county government was being handled, and you had specifically been summoned.
Yeah.
To be on a grand jury that was specifically for that purpose. Is that right?
That's correct.
And so I guess the lesson that one might learn out of all this would be, if you're summoned to a grand jury, you must not think.
Don't go.
Well, you
run the other way.
You must not.
Yeah.
Read. You must not do anything.
Don't do anything. Yeah.
You must not do anything that you are not ordered to do by someone who is on the permanent state payroll.
I guess.
And the issue is that commoners should not attempt to understand the law.
That's correct.
Because we are just commoners and we have no sense.
Correct.
We certainly can't read.
Well, we don't have the wisdom that's that by getting a bar card implies. We're not smart enough to have a bar card, therefore we are not allowed to think. And that's it. That's what I've been told so far. That's what has been demonstrated to me. And the criticism of all these brilliant lawyers that are out here on all of these blogs and so forth, that I'm doing everything wrong, I'm doing the best I can under the circumstances. And since the lawyers place so much value on their time that I can't afford them, maybe there's a few millionaires out there that can, but I certainly can't afford it, it allows them to pretty much abuse me any way they want. And they've done a hell of a job on it so far.
Well, I mean, we're not even close to done because we haven't even begun to explore some of the problems. One of the things that I'm sure that maybe Terry shouldn't talk too much about at this point on his own is that his entire defense to this case depends on one thing and pretty much one thing only, and that is his interpretation of the law. And, you know, what we're seeing over and over again in this cases like this and other cases of totally different things, like IRS cases, for instance, is that what I was just saying a few minutes ago, commoners are not permitted to speak about the meaning or interpretation of the law. By commoners, I mean... basically, anyone who's not an employee of the state.
Or a member of the bar.
Or a member of the bar, or, you know, I mean, never mind, you know, people who've, say, gotten a JD and, you know, fallen out of favor with some judges. I know at least one such person sitting at this table. You know, it's fascinating that there was not a single bar member at the Declaration of Independence. For the simple reason that there were no bars, there were no organized or integrated bars in 1776 or at the forming of the Constitution 11 years later, 1787, or in the first Congress, and yet somehow the country came into existence. And what seems to have happened is that the notion of a law license has become of elevated to something approaching a title of nobility. And that's why it's appropriate, I think, for, you know, Terry and me to grouse here and say, you know, since we're commoners, we simply don't have the noble ability to understand all this, but I mean, what Terry seems to have done is he seems to have taken an official charge to do a job too seriously. Do you think that's an unfair characterization?
No. Well, I did exactly what they told me. And the thing that's interesting, since you brought up the law, this 8430855, which is one of the obstruction of justice statutes, was just modified this year because it was determined to be infringing on First Amendment rights, at what they call the overbreadth doctrine. And this law, even with the adjustment that they made to it, still has several parts of it, paragraphs in it, that say this law does not apply to just members of society getting together and issuing a petition for redress of grievances. And it's essentially, the law says one thing, then it turns right around and retracts it, specifically in this particular instance. Yet, the state attorney has determined that he doesn't want to deal with the extraction part of it or the indemnity clauses in it. He's pulling them out and applying them anyhow. I mean, there's so many things about this case that are just blatant in the way that they're violating their own rules and their own statutes. So I don't know where it can go. It's I'm really in a bad situation here. I tried my best to live up to my civic duty, my sworn duty, and the instructions from the state Supreme Court. And now this prosecutor from another district is going after me. So I don't know what to do. I'm losing complete faith in all of it, and feel like we've lost our republic totally.
Well, you're not far off. I was looking for that declaration of probable cause you showed me earlier. I wanted to read it for the viewers here. The paperwork against Terry is sort of spectacularly vague and a little bit on the confusing side.
The order in the back. There's several things that are written in this that just make no sense. There are sentences.
Here we go. This is an order signed by a magistrate. It's a 7-page probable cause document. It summarizes, on August 14th, the People's Grand Jury under common law held session in Dixie County, Florida. The purpose of that session was to decide whether to consent to criminal charges against Third Judicial State Attorney Jeffrey A. Siegmeister, Superintendent of Schools for Dixie County, Mark Raines, it's signed by somebody named Frank Linton. Who's that? Who's Frank Linton?
He's the Florida Department of Law Enforcement special agent.
Special agent, okay. And the judge signed the order as follows. This cause coming before me as first appearance magistrate and having reviewed the preceding affidavit find, probable cause sufficient, probable cause not sufficient, and unless corrected within 72 hours, the defendant shall be released on his own recognizance. They didn't choose or cross out anything. They just left all this preprinted language in there. And it's kind of fascinating. They both, the magistrate seems to have found that probable cause to arrest was both sufficient and not sufficient, and needed to be corrected within 72 hours. And this is what the licensed legal minds can create. This is what people who actually do have Florida law licenses, and in fact judges' appointments, signed, I can't really read this name.
Hankinson.
James
Hankinson. Yeah.
James Hankinson. He found absolutely nothing, it seems, except he did set 10 counts of ten charges out of your 14 at that either.
Well, I was first arrested on 10 charges, and then when they finally did an information, I was arrested without a warrant, without an indictment, and without information. And 18 days after this, or 16 days after this, they finally came out with an information, and it had 14 charges on it, or counts. And but yet they still didn't, the description of whatever it was I was supposed to have been doing didn't include the nature and cause of the charges, and they refused to explain to me what I had done to cause these charges. To this day, they haven't explained it.
It's a really fascinating case because it's a matter of summoning a private citizen to do a certain job, getting him instructions which he could confirm online, and then prosecuting him for taking all this seriously. And the reason that they're prosecuting him, of course, is that he found possible wrongdoing in the very officials who appointed him. Now, we all know that for a soldier to try to accuse his superior is probably a bad idea, right? I mean, you couldn't have done that in the Army, could you?
Oh, yeah, you could, actually. In fact, the process in the military would have been a lot cleaner than this. There is very serious consequences for senior officers that violate their oath, but in civilian life, apparently, that's if you accuse, let's say, an official of official misconduct, you have to take it to him with your complaint, and then he gets to retaliate. I want to bring up one more thing to you. I was arrested on a warrant. The warrant was arrested by deputy sheriff. Was assigned by a deputy sheriff instead of a judge. And the thing that I see here is that this deputy sheriff, because a judge, according to the rules of criminal procedure, a warrant must be signed by a judge. So apparently this deputy sheriff has been impersonating a public officer. And this warrant, since it's not legal, simulates legal process. And he definitely came after me, so I was intimidated under color of law. Mm. Apparently, and if
that
you go
tracks,
to a,
that tracks the charges against you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of like, okay, fine, I get charged for this, but he doesn't, and they have no evidence against me, and here's a document that this guy signed as clear evidence of what he did.
But now this form, now this is interesting because this form says it's pre-printed to be signed by a sheriff.
That's correct. But that's the sheriff. The sheriff is just as culpable as the officer.
And what does the Fourth Amendment say? Something about warrant shall not issue but upon probable cause.
That's correct.
Issued by a detached magistrate.
That's correct. And there's no probable cause. There was no probable cause, no affidavit, no charges, no nothing when this warrant was issued and I was arrested.
And so basically we have pretty good evidence that the customs practices and policies of Dixie County, Florida, do not comply with the Constitution of either the United States or Florida.
Or any of the statutes. I mean, they're operating completely outside the law and with impunity.
And absolute immunity. Robert, all I can say is, I just heard about this case for the first time on Saturday. I'm meeting this man for the first time today. He's brought me this stack of materials. He's got a PowerPoint exposition that I'll give him your address, and you can put it up on your website with this maybe, so that people can see it. It's a fascinating study in a microcosm of America today. America today is all about taking responsible people who think and making the penalty for thinking and reflecting as if you were free, so high that no one will dare to do it. And, you and I have discussed this on several occasions before. Is there any rationale for this? Is there anything other than a journey down the road that, we've said this before, that began in February of 1848 in London with the publication of Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels' Communist Manifesto? Is there anything else that we're aiming for in this country other than the complete implementation of a dictatorship where all of us exist solely as the servants of an all-powerful government, and we dare not criticize it, we dare not complain? Terry, am I saying anything wrong here?
No, I'm in complete agreement. That's what I see, and it's not what I want to see. I'd like to see this our republic restored under the Constitution, but I'm being shown very clearly these courts, although all of these judges take an oath to the Constitution, not a one of them lives up to that oath. And it's like that all through the officials of the state of Florida. State of Florida, oath of office. The officers, when they're elected, swear to protect, defend, and uphold the U.S. Constitution and government and of the state of Florida. It's the most nonsensical phrase anybody could imagine. I don't know who constructed it. Well, yes, I do. I did research into it. The oath of office with people swearing an oath, public officers swearing an oath to a government, any government, and the way this oath is structured, it's two governments, both Florida and the U.S., and two different constitutions, so they're serving four masters. This was done in 1867, at the end of the Civil War, when it's called the Carpetbagger Constitution.
During Reconstruction.
During Reconstruction, the carpetbaggers came in here. They were just picking up freed slaves out of the fields and putting them in senators and representatives' positions in state government. And they wrote this oath so they could use their positions in government as control over these freed slaves that were now acting as our rightful legislators and senators. Now, this is nothing against the slaves, but it shows you what we're still following it. The slaves are still doing exactly what they've been doing for, 140, 50 years. So the point being that we're not gaining ground anywhere, and we have no oath of office that means anything to anybody, and we can't hold our public officials to any commitment of any kind, and they're demonstrating that absolutely daily.
Well, yeah, it's just a tremendously interesting situation. I have to say it's different from anything I've ever encountered, because it's got this interesting mix, doesn't it, of official appointment, actual duties instructed, and then the state attorney, basically, who started this whole process, coming back and saying, no, you got this all wrong. You mustn't actually follow your conscience. You mustn't actually follow the Supreme Court's instructions. You actually have to do what I say, and only what I say.
Yeah.
And, in other words, the movement that started to free the slaves, in a sense, it's making us all into slaves.
Yeah.
And that's probably the real lesson of what's going on here. 70 years is longer than many people get for murder. You know, second-degree murder is like 20 to 30 years, typically.
You just don't point out official corruption, because corrupt officials will retaliate. Everything they've accused me of, they are doing. They're acting under color of law. They are simulating legal process. And because they're operating outside their official capacity, they are impersonating public officers. So this is a true Alice down the rabbit hole scenario. None of this makes any sense. And I know about all the criticism that all of the bar attorneys out there that are sitting out pontificating about what a fool I am. And
who has said this? I mean,
well, this is, look, you go to Fogbo, you go to, you know, all of these communist sites that are out there, and they're so quick to criticize me, yet there's not a one of them that has actually offered to help me out. As desperate as I am for help and as hard as I've been looking for somebody to help me with this thing, nobody's willing to step up unless I pay them a king's ransom. And I there's no justice, period. It's gone. I don't know where to go with this.
Well, there are procedures for trying to address this, and maybe we'll be talking about those. But I want to ask you one last question. You wrote this letter to Judge Cynthia Munkittrick.
Munkittrick, yeah.
And that was basically a summary of your grievances, right?
Well, the letter, it was 7 pages, and it basically stated, and I tried to be very, very clear with her everything that happened, because I didn't want to be somebody to just go to her and say, Jeffy's not playing fair. I really spent a lot of time with this. I spent a weekend working on this 7-page letter to her, explaining all of the points that he violated and putting in the statute, cites, everything else. So she didn't have to do any work other than just read the thing and understand what this man had done. And I asked her to please respond to me and sit down and let's talk and see how we're going to solve this problem. And she responded with silence. She didn't do anything. I said this to the state attorney, the guy who's prosecuting me. I said, you know, I tried everything I could do to get the help of the court that promised that they would be there for me in the event this happened, and the court completely ignored me. And his comment was, well, I would have too. And the inference that I got from it is you do not criticize a state attorney. It doesn't matter what he does. And so no wonder she didn't pay any attention to you. You're not allowed to point out public corruption while you're seated on a panel that's ordered to point out public corruption.
Now, just one more document in here. This is just the most fascinating file. You were actually removed, apparently, officially from the position, which sort of confirms that you were acting in an official capacity, doesn't it?
That's correct.
I mean, you order finding cause to remove and replace a grand juror, signed August 25th by Greg Parker, the Chief Judge of the Third Judicial District in Florida.
Yep.
And it says, well, I can see one. You violated this order for sure. This court further reminds respondent Terry Tressel that he is forever bound by the secrecy requirements of Florida law. Absent a court order as set forth in Chapter 905 of the Florida Statutes and the instruction, what do they order you to keep a secret?
Well, there are certain parts of the grand jury session, which we never got to, by the way, that are secret, which is deliberations, voting, and instructions from the state attorney. None of that ever happened. I did report this thing. I did say what happened, but these were criminal acts, and I declared the grand jury to be void because of the fact it was tainted by the state attorney. And that was it. I had to call an end to the session because the grand jury was just taken over by the runaway state attorney. It couldn't function as a grand jury. I can just say this. It's my position now, I'm set for jury trial on the 9th. I still have no attorney. The judge has assigned me to present myself sui juris or pro se, whatever he says it is. And I explained to him that I couldn't afford the $100,000-plus fee that the attorneys were demanding from me. He said that he would not give me a public defender. And so I'm stuck. I I'm being told that I'll just go to slaughter, that I have no, I'm not going to be allowed to mount a defense. It's according to what the judge said, that I'll have to sit there in the court and wait while the state attorney just presents his side of the case, and the jury will decide the way the state attorney tells them to decide.
Is there somebody who's got a website for you that's trying to collect for funds or anything?
Well, there is a website. It's and I can't even remember what it is, but it's I can't even think of what the thing is at this point. But there is a website for funds, and it's
who's running it?
Well, it's a commercial site, and what you do is you just make your donations to it. Hang on one second, I'll show you. GoFundMe, that's it.
Okay.
It's a GoFundMe site, and anyhow, anybody can go on there and put in everything to help right now. Man, my wife and I are just absolutely devastated financially, and with our little bit of income that we've normally got anyhow, and then to have this stuff going on has just been devastating. So we do appreciate anything that we can get that will help out with this. And what I'm going to do, it's Justice for Terry Defense Fund, and it is GoFundMe Justice for Terry. And, we can use all the help we can get right now. And I tell you what, if there's an attorney out there that feels the urge to just take shots at me, maybe you could convert your energies to giving me a little bit of help, some guidance, some advice. And if there's an attorney in there from Florida that cares anything at all about true justice and you're willing to help out in any way, either from a guidance standpoint, advice, I don't know anything. I'm just getting desperate. And
I have a phone number and email that they should contact?
I'll tell you what. I'm going to give you my phone number. It's 904-403-9186. That's my personal cell phone number. And if somebody wants to help me, I have to take help from anywhere I can get it at this point. I just feel like I'm going to walk right into a kangaroo court, and I'm done.
How about an email?
The email is going to be jurijustice25@gmail.com. jurijustice25@gmail.com.
Well, again, I just can't thank you enough for talking to us tonight. I think we're just about out of time here.